Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today's guest is somebody that you all know. You might not realize it right now, but you will. It's David Lander, who for 7 years played Squiggy on Laverne and Shirley. And David, I just happen to be so interested in the relationship between actor slash character and audience. Mm-hmm. The truth of the matter is it's a totally unequal one. You're in my home, in my living room, in my bedroom, and everyone else's, once a week until reruns. Mm-hmm. And so you're such a familiar part of our families, and you don't know who we are.
Right.
So,
that's true.
Pardon?
That's true. I live in this void. I don't know who anybody is.
That's right. So let's just talk about you. I read that you knew at the age of 10 you wanted to be an actor.
Yeah, I realized there was nothing else I could do. I mean, I thought my father, who was basically the one I would look for guidance, he said, well, you know, maybe you should be an actor, because I was terrible in school.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I read something about that too, yes.
Yeah, I was no good. My father was a teacher, the chairman of the math department at James Monroe High School.
Oh.
My mother was a guidance counselor in a junior high school. I had the perfect parents. People would say, you mean you get lousy marks and both your parents are teachers? And then when I get good marks, I go, well, sure, both his parents are teachers.
What did you get good marks in?
When I got good in English, I did pretty well. Yeah. I was the first teacher who encouraged me for creative writing.
And sometimes you have to find the thing you're wired for.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what your parents. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you did more. I mean, I'm stammering out of love for Squiggy. So I'm thinking, you talk about who Squiggy was, because before you said he was so dumb.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, we used to say, you know, the thing they used to say about Laurel and Hardy, which I'm actually have the audacity to compare ourselves to that. But Laurel is the Hardy is the dumb guy who thinks he's a genius, and Laurel is the genius who thinks he's a dumb guy.
Oh, nice distinction.
With Lenny and Squiggy, I used to go, Lenny is the dumb guy who thinks he's a genius, and Squiggy is the dumb guy who also thinks. It was much better
opposite.
The way I used to say it,
yes.
But it's now early.
Yes.
So
because, you know, I think like every entrance with Squiggy came at just a time with that hello.
Well, sure. That was basically an old joke. You know, the worst person you could see in a situation now enters to come in. Like,
but Squiggy touched something because we all have a little part of that in us, I think.
Oh, he's everybody's worst brother-in-law. I mean, all those things, you know.
Well, that too. But like how many of us, you know, walk into a situation and there, but for the grace of God, we don't stick our own foot in our mouth.
Well, the weird thing was that there was that silly hello joke, which was basically a way to get him into there was the first Laverne and Shirley. We set it up in the first scene where the girls didn't like Lenny and Squiggy. But we had stolen these gowns or whatever the plot led from Squiggy's uncle has a wax museum fetch thing. But we stole it and we gave it to the girls to wear at this ritzy party they were going to. The thing was, how could we get them into the house? Because everyone who went in the house, they knocked three times. The girl grabbed a baseball bat and said, who is it? Well, Lenny and Squiggy, you can't say that because they never let him in. So we just did, oh, don't worry, Shirley, your Prince Charming may walk right through that door.
Oh, and then
and that's how we said, okay, we get him in. It's a joke. We go, how did he open the door? Isn't this door locked? But nobody cares because they got the joke.
So
that's the way it was done. And, you know.
Did you like doing that?
Yeah, but I used to say there are too many hello jokes. They would write, like, I'd have a hello joke three scenes in a row. I'd say, no, the audience will start. They'll get hip to this. They'll say, no, I know when this happens.
I think people look forward to it.
Yeah, but it's not where you don't want it where you want the surprise element.
Yes.
It's always going to get you the laugh. And if they're used to it and they start calling it out before I even say hello, then you go, well, this joke isn't working.
Except for one thing. It doesn't work as a joke. I understand that. But it works as some kind of a bonding.
Yeah. Well, it's basically the wrong guy in the right time.
Yes, I know.
That
is so true. And what else? You did a lot of, what else did you do after that? I understand you did a lot of voice work and.
Oh, yeah. And I did a TV show. I did David Lynch's TV show On the Air, which should have been called Off the Air because It was pretty bad.
Was it?
Well, at the time, I didn't know it was that bad, but in retrospect, it was bad. And, yeah, I did some movies, Man with One Red Shoe, not really memorable films.
And you said that life changed in a particular year where you were diagnosed.
Well, I was diagnosed with MS. Laverne and Shirley had just ended that year, so that was like 7 years of sturdy employment. And now, not only was it over, but guess what? I've got MS. So the first thing I did was, you don't want anyone to know you got it, simply because it's not like people are cruel or people are, you know, not nice, but it was basically once they knew you had MS, it wasn't their fault you're not going to get hired, because it's basically, I wouldn't tell Michael McKean, who was my partner, I didn't tell him for 9 years after I was diagnosed, because I kept saying, well, because they're going to ask him every time, what about Dave Lanning?
Oh, yes.
All I need to do is he's going to get into some flowery statement about me, which ends with, then he got MS, and he's not doing anything.
And there's no point redefining yourself when you don't need to.
And it also was strange, because
what was your first, just so people can know sometimes what to look for? How did you first know?
Well, I had basically, I think I was doing a show at the Wiltern Theater, and I parked in the parking lot. And walked to the stage door. And as soon as I left the car, I just collapsed.
Oh, my goodness.
My legs gave out. I didn't have anything. And then I basically crawled to the stage door because I still had a show to do. And then I got in and I said, you know where I sit for the first scene? I said, yeah, well, sit me there.
Oh, my
goodness. And let's take it from that.
So that wasn't a subtle...
No, I knew I couldn't walk. Oh, I knew I had no balance. I didn't know why.
Did you go to the doctor the next day?
Well, I did, but there was nothing they could find. You know, MS is very hard to diagnose in many ways because it looks like other diseases. Maybe it is, but it was basically until I was given a spinal tap, and then I was then they broke the news to me.
And so you said you didn't mention it to your partner or anybody. When did you finally do that, and why?
Well, eventually in 1999 was a Dinner of Champions. And Dinner of Champions, Tom Sherrick, who used to work at 20th Century Fox, it was his charity, and it was for MS. And you'd get champions like baseball players, players, actors, and they would promote the drug or whatever it was. So that was kind of interesting, but, you know, when my life totally changed, I had to go completely out front, not only not hide it anymore, but now I have to volunteer. Yes, I've got it. This is what it looks like on me. And that was basically then I did tours for MS groups and stuff like that for about next
so that's
six
huge.
Or 7 years. Yeah.
Really, to reach people. And
oh, yes. It was great. It was wonderful. I wrote a book, and it was...
What's the book? What is the book called?
It's called Fall Down Laughing.
Oh, I saw that, yes. And we can get that on...
I guess. What I did then, which was shows where I was at, we had just published the book, and it was out. But when going to these patient programs, the thought was, well, what are you going to give them? We want to give them the book? Because it's basically, I thought the best value of that book was for newly diagnosed people.
Of course, yeah.
So that was usually the audience I was playing to. So, rather than give the book away, because a lot of people with MS have difficulty seeing things or reading things.
Oh.
And it was like I'd see people come up at the end of the show and say, I love your book. I have to wait till my sister comes over to read it to me. And I thought, boy, if ever there was a book that should have an audio book, it's this. It deals with MS. It's a problem. And the publishing company didn't want to do it. And there's no money in it. I said, but think of what... No, they don't want to do it. But they did give me the rights to it. So they gave me the rights to the audio book because they figured it wouldn't do anything. And I didn't really know what it was going to do. But it was... They basically told the people at Biogen, which was the drug company that was sort of paying for me, they were given the rights to turn the book into an audio book. We wouldn't sell it. We just hand it out when we were there. And it was great for the first 2 years. We gave that thing out until new lawyers came in for
Biogen. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And I said, what do you mean you give it away for free? Well, it's a gesture, and I did. And Biogen, before you were there, they agreed to make this book for me, an audio book. Well, we don't know that. I said, well, the publishing company wrote a letter to Biogen telling them they had the rights to the book. Well, how do we know that they weren't just putting a trick on you? I mean, it was...
That's so bizarre.
And here we are, and the people who are online to see me, and they're not going to give them the book until they get a complete clear-all that the book isn't property of anybody. So what they do is they'd hand out little pieces of paper saying, next time we're in town, go claim your book, which...
That's crazy. So what was the agenda of this new lawyer, just to get new fees?
It's like any new lawyer. I'm going to come in, I'm going to make sure we don't get ripped off this time. So basically, it was not a money-making proposition.
Right.
It was basically a promotion. And it was my
book. And a help.
Yeah. And people loved that book. I mean, they loved, especially that it was audio, because that solved so many problems. And
well, so for those of you who would like to read it, you can still probably get it. I shouldn't say. Maybe on Amazon where you can get anything.
I think so. If it's still in print.
Yeah. Okay.
And I've got a lot of the audio books when I go and do a presentation.
You're going to do what?
When I do a presentation, I'll take some of the audio books.
Oh, so you still have?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Hand
okay.
Out,
so. So where are you doing presentations coming up?
Nowhere.
Oh, so just if and when you get asked
to. Yeah. Okay. I was supposed to go to San Francisco next week.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm not going to go.
Okay.
Not
right.
Because I have anything against San Francisco. It's just I don't think I'm healthy enough to go.
Oh, okay.
So
if you did travel, though, you'd have somebody to travel with you. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And what is it? Kind of a silly question because I know it's second nature to you, but it isn't to me and it won't be to a lot of people. And I know people who have been newly diagnosed.
Mm.
And somehow to have people lead the way, to know what to expect.
Well, the thing is, that when you get MS, it was basically in my situation of about 2 weeks before I was really diagnosed with it. You know you've got something. And people will volunteer, oh, I had that. This is what it is. But they're invariably wrong. Because it was MS. It was different.
Yeah.
MS has a lot of similarities to other diseases.
Uh-huh.
But it's not the same thing. And also I used to say, well, you know, you can't really think of... There's no cure for MS.
Right.
Well, there's a cure. I mean, you look at the various cases of MS. Annette Funicello had MS.
Mm-hmm.
She had a much different case of MS
uh-huh.
than I did.
Uh-huh.
Not to take anything away from anybody, but
sure.
It was... If you're going to cure her, will that cure me? There's no blanket thing.
Like, so why do you think people do that? I had that.
Well,
I
they want a cure. I mean, everybody wants a cure.
So they're on your side when they're saying that. They want to be encouraging?
Yeah, but it's also like, is there a cure for this? Is there a cure? I mean, everyone would want to know that. And you go, well, there's not really a cure. There's a way to treat it, which for years we didn't even have any treatments. So I suppose now we've made a step forward. But, you know, it's so difficult to tell when you've got it. And at first you can think you're just a hypochondriac. Because you're complaining about things that once you complain about it, doesn't seem like that much. Your foot does what? Well, it doesn't really catch up with my other foot. Oh, that happened to me. I once had... I proceed to tell you this great adventure story that had nothing to do with anything. And say, now I'm cured of it. Okay.
I think sometimes people like to feel they're in charge.
Yeah.
So they tell you these things.
I mean,
right?
I used to do a lot of talk shows. And I remember one of the people... Dave Lander is here to talk about MS.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who was the guest before me said, oh, MS, my friend figured out the cure. What do you mean you figure out? Well, I know she doesn't have it now, so she took a special... I said, no, I don't believe it. You know, and I'm starting an argument with the next guest, and we're just supposed to come on and talk about our wonderful experiences. But I kept saying, that's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Your friend is full of it.
Yeah.
She didn't find a cure. You know, you shouldn't tell people that a cure is around the corner, because it isn't.
Well, and for people for whom there is no cure, it can't do anything but make you feel like you're not doing the right thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean that's not a... Yeah.
You know, constantly in search of a way to treat this thing. And a lot of weird things. I mean, magnets was a big deal.
What was?
Magnets.
You I don't know anything about that.
Magnets on you, and then it...
Sounds a little primitive, but... Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, okay. People would swear by, oh, no, this is it. I'm telling you, the magnets thing works for me, you know.
Okay.
There are a lot of things that...
So what what else in life right now for you?
Well, right now, I'm more involved with my daughter. I mean, I love her. And she's a star of a...
Okay, talk about her a little bit, because she did a love letters with me.
Uh-huh.
And which is when I saw that, because she sent me a picture with you and her mother,
uh-huh.
the three of you. And I had said to you when I came in, insensitive as it sounds, because I knew only Squiggy.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at this picture and I thought, my goodness, what a intelligent, sweet, uh-huh. handsome looking man the reality is.
Yeah.
And she's wonderful.
She's great.
Yes. So tell me about her.
Well, what's so interesting about Natalie that I find is that she's been so interested in she when she sang, she took lessons.
Uh-huh.
When she acted, she took lessons.
Oh.
She was in no way, oh, I can do this, I don't need this, or that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like that. She is a working actress and does her job very well, and I'm quite proud of her. I think she's much better than I was at that age, because I think that she really has gone into it more seriously than I think I did.
Yeah, and I guess people, well, I don't know, do people go into it differently now? You say that she's taking lessons and...
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean, she knows how to use the system.
That's what I'm asking,
yeah. She knows how to, everybody's account she can get to, She finds out about shows that she thinks she'd be right for before her agent does.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So she does real.
Good for her.
She's very active.
So she played that mean little girl on that TV show.
Yeah, now she's doing the musical version of Mean Girls. Which
oh, is there?
And she got the part. She'd auditioned for the movie. She didn't get the part. But they remembered her, and now they're doing the musical, and they said, can you sing? And she said, sure, do you want me to do a... Because they said, well, we like you for this part. And she mm-hmm. was already disappointed about she never got it. But now they're suddenly calling her up saying, you know what? We think you'd be right for the musical.
And is that performing now?
Mm-hmm.
Is that playing now?
Four nights a week.
In Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Okay, so if anybody's going to be here.
March, yeah.
Nice. So my question was, she's such a sweet human being.
Mm-hmm.
She's such a nice person. And I said to her, how do you play the part of such a wretched child, wretched teenager, as sweet as you? She said, well, I just remember when people were like that to me.
Oh, he's so sweet.
Now, I guess that's what we can do. You know, bullying is, yes, no accounting for
yeah.
it. Oh, well, let me ask you something, because I am basically about love letters
mm-hmm.
and writing things down and sending them, because I've seen how everyone changes a life.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there is almost no life situation that doesn't have, I mean, tragic or not, that doesn't have the seeds within it of a love letter to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
A letter of appreciation, a letter of a memory. Did you used to write letters?
Yeah.
Because we're maybe close to the same age and that was
Honestly, I had a girlfriend in Montreal who I very rarely saw,
uh-huh.
but we were very much in love. And as far as the letters go. I mean, I really enjoyed writing her letters.
And did she write to you also?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, isn't that, yes. Courtship through letters.
Yeah.
Do you have those letters?
Not anymore, I don't think. And I just found out she died.
Oh. Yeah,
she died 5 years before I knew it that she died. So.
So if you, do you write to anybody now or recently
no.
in your life?
No, I'm pretty much.
If you were to write one right now, who would it be to?
I guess it'd be to my wife or to my daughter, one of those.
Because I'm listening to you and I can think of a whole bunch of people that would be fabulous to write letters to. I mean, what about your sweetheart in Canada? Does she have children?
No.
Okay.
She never got married.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it'd be hard to write to somebody, a descendant.
No, I don't think she was as crazy about me as I was about
Well, I understand
her.
That part, but sometimes even those letters are good to get. Yeah. Somehow memory letters are really nice.
Oh, no, it's really good. It was sort of, we learned how to write letters.
Yes.
You know, I don't know what they do in school anymore.
Oh, they're not learning handwriting in many schools anymore. Yeah, you're shaking bad. Your head like that. Handwriting is king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's also playing with crime detection. Mm-hmm. The fact that there's no cursive handwriting anymore.
I know.
You know, so that's the problem. But also your handwriting, whether or not you can, whether or not it's good handwriting, it's
My handwriting has gotten to the point where it's illegible.
Sure.
I used to go to a lot of baseball games. Uh-huh. I'd score all the games. I'd go from the first inning to the ninth inning to the tenth. Yeah. But I always scored the whole game. And now I can go to a game, but I won't score it because I just can't
sure.
go as fast. As it's not really that
But you fun. Could if you want to drop a note to somebody.
Well, I'm thinking of doing, once the season begins, just watching the game on TV and scoring it.
Yeah.
Just to see if I still could. I mean, I know how to score, but whether I could still write it, you know.
But, you know, even in writing letters, like emotionally significant letters, even if somebody does it on a computer, if your handwriting for some physical reason
mm-hmm.
is not good enough to read, it's still yours. I mean, mm-hmm. you could still, you know, write a signature, something. Mm-hmm. Because you know what that is? When you send a letter that you've either written or signed with a little PS or something, the person who gets it is holding something that's felt the touch of your hand.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's huge, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to your wife? Is that too personal to ask?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what I would say to her, but, yeah. you know.
That's nice. Okay, well, I want to thank you for doing this with me.
My pleasure.
Pleasure to have met you.
Thank you.
And I will look at Laverne and Shirley reruns with a whole new eye.
Yeah.
They're still on, you know. Of course you know.
Well, they're on, but they're not on. I mean, it was like they were on the Channel 3 here, which was like MeTV. It's like, you know.
Oh, I love MeTV.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we were on for about, a year.
Uh-huh.
And they just ran out of episodes, I guess, or they just said no.
Oh, I still get them. I still get them in San Francisco. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think that's a third
a local.
I mean, there's so many yeah. tiers of this.
I know. Thing. I know. Okay. Well, thank you, dear. So, if ever you have more to say or share, will you do another one with me? I'll
sure.
come visit.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So for now, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay.